Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferentz.
Workers harmed by foreign trade get assistance, over $92 million for wage subsidies and training. Meanwhile, the pro-union Senate, how companies could face penalties for violating worker rights. And today on the show, the latest from the American Legion and the Alliance for Retired Americans. Welcome to the Friday, July 16th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Two guests on the show today, longtime regulars, Mr. Jeffrey Stoffer, who is the editor of the American Legion magazine. He heads the Media and Communications Division. We'll preview the August edition, and I'll tell you, it's jam-packed full of really good articles. Number one, we're going to talk about veteran underemployment. That means not having enough paid work or not doing work that makes the full use of a person's skills and abilities. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of people that come out of the military with those skills. And for years, we've talked about this on the show, there's been a really tough time transferring those skills into the private sector. Granted, it is getting better. I know the International Brotherhood of Teamsters has done a really, really good job. You think about all the people that are driving Jeeps and trucks, tanks. Well, why can't they drive a semi? An 18-wheeler makes sense, right? The article points out that veterans are often pigeonholed. If you drove a truck in the Army, this is right out of the article, well, that's what you know how to do and what you should do when you get out. That seems to be the conventional thinking, which is terribly flawed for two reasons. First, 70% of people coming out of the military do not want to do what they did in the military. That's the other part of the problem. So we'll get into that. We're also going to talk about Agent Orange, and this is quite a fascinating story. When you talk about Agent Orange, you think about Vietnam because they used it in Vietnam and Cambodia. Well, this one goes back to the 50s in Guam. Guam veterans are not being acknowledged that they are suffering from Agent Orange. Apparently, it was used on Guam from 1958 to 1980. The vets have gone to the VA and said, hey, we've got some problems here. We're getting sick. Some are dying. Nothing's happening. Uphill battle is the title of this article written by Ken Olson. Another story here, overdue honor. I hope we have time to get into this. This involves an individual, a black D-Day vet. All right? 70-year Legionnaire who waited 77 years to get his Purple Heart. That's sad and also tragic in the same sense. And we're also going to get into the Idaho Off-Road Riders Program. Like I said, there's a lot of good stuff in this upcoming edition. Rich Fiesta will be joining us on behalf of the Alliance for Retired Americans, retiredamericans.org. And big news yesterday. If you're on Social Security, and there's many people in that category, you could see a bump. The Social Security cost of living adjustment for 2022 could be 6.1% due to inflation. You know everything is going up right now. Well, Social Security is based on the Consumer Price Index, and the new estimate comes as the CPI in June, last month, increased 5.4% from a year before. So they're calculating by the end of the year, it'll be over 6%. Now, there's another part of the story. You know, Congress is watching this, and they're looking at the piggy bank here, and they're figuring, well, maybe we should recalculate Social Security, so people don't get that much money. Oh, my God, you got to love our politicians. I'm sure Rich is going to have a field day with this one. The other story is, well, last week, a week ago, the Social Security Administrator was fired by President Biden. I'm sure he'll talk about that. He had a horrible relationship with the unions. But the big story, and we touched on this with the auto workers the other day, lower prices for drugs. Come on. Come on. Medicare Part D was instituted, what, 15 years ago? And when they passed that legislation, they pretty much wrote it in that they cannot negotiate drug prices like the VA does. I mean, think about this. Anytime you buy in bulk, you get a better deal, right? Not when it comes to Part D for Social Security recipients. No, no, no. And they're pretty much fed up, and they've been on this campaign for a long time. And in fact, a new report came out that Rich is going to share with us, analyzing the finances of 14 of the world's largest drug corporations. The corporations have spent $56 million more on stock buybacks, dividends to investors, and other forms of executive compensation, rather than do research and development on drugs. They always say, oh, yeah, we're spending all the money on research. Well, that's not true. Some of it, yes. Most of the research is done by our government. Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, Rich has a lot to talk about. He'll be our second guest right here on the show. Well, the U.S. Department of Labor announced yesterday $92.6 million in funding going to 47 states to provide training and employment services to eligible workers affected adversely by foreign trade. You know, there's a lot of people in that category. Administered by the department's Employment and Training Administration, the Trade Adjustment Assistance for Workers program supports training, employment, and case management services, job search and relocation allowances, and income support while you're getting trained. It's a good program. In addition, the program provides a subsidy to workers age 50 on up whose reemployment wages are lower than the wages earned in their prior trade-affected employment. That is huge. Think about all the people that had a good job in manufacturing. We know manufacturing pays better than retail and restaurants. I mean, way better. And that job disappears because they found cheaper labor in China or Mexico or Vietnam. So you get a new job. You're working at Walmart or Amazon, any place that's with that pays lower wages. Well, this program will make up the difference. Marty Walsh heads the Labor Department, and he said, this announcement provides much-needed funding to train and support workers whose employment was affected adversely by foreign trade. Helping these workers transition to new employment is critical to the nation's equitable recovery and serves as a reminder to Congress of the urgent need to reauthorize trade adjustment assistance for workers to ensure more workers can receive those benefits. And the Labor Department broke it down. Like I said, there's 47 states. Oregon is actually getting the most, $7.7 million. California, $7.6 million. New York, $3 million. Pennsylvania, almost $7 million, $6.9 Michigan, $3.4 million. Ohio, $3.9 million. Again, the total, $92,621 to help workers. The Senate Democrats' new budget reconciliation bill, been talking about this the last couple days, plans to financially penalize companies that violate worker rights. Yes, 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 yes. Listen, the proposal is planned to be embedded into the $3.5 trillion bill, utilizing the National Labor Relations Board to levy penalties where appropriate. Senator Bernie Sanders remarked that this provision would be part of the PRO Act's integration into the bill. Now, he did not expand on what other provisions might also make it into the legislation. These penalties would give unions much more leverage at the bargaining table with employers who often only face the penalty of potential back pay. The absence of meaningful penalties makes it rational for employers to fire pro-union employees, even if they are forced to rehire them. That goes on a daily basis. Remember the stats on that. 1 out of 4 people that try to organize a union in their shop, gone. Gone. And it takes years before they can resolve it. So this is interesting. Is this going to pass? There's a lot of negotiation to go on. The good news about this is reconciliation. It's got nothing to do with 60 votes. All right? All they need, 50 Democrats. That's not easy. We know that. 50 Democrats, and then Kamala Harris can make it 51. Hundreds of workers at Frito-Lay have remained on strike. They went on strike on July 5th. This is at the Topeka plant, all in response to crushing working conditions. I tell you, I saw this story. I said, oh, my God. I thought it was bad at Amazon. In response to surging pandemic demand, I guess everybody's trying to get potato chips and pretzels right now. Well, the workers have been forced to work 84-hour work weeks. Let me repeat that. 84-hour work weeks. Not 40, not 50, not 60, 84. Many work in 12-hour days, 7 days a week, with only 8 hours between clocking in and out. Tony Sheldon is president of the Bakery, Confectionery, Tobacco Workers, and Grain Millers. That's Local 218 in Topeka. He said, they're forcing the current workforce to work double and triple shifts, preventing employees from even seeing their family. What's Frito-Lay saying about this? Well, we are committed to a safe and fair workplace. However, workers have failed to receive a fair share in the gains of the company, even though they're doing well. Their parent company is PepsiCo. PepsiCo took in over $70 billion in revenue last year. They also increased their stock valuation by 19%. Where's worker wages? Up 77 cents in 12 years. That's it. 77 cents over 12 years. On top of that, there's a lot of safety problems at the plant. In recent years, OSHA has fined the factory in Topeka, Kansas, for vehicle accidents and amputations. Now, they have proposed a contract which would provide pay increases of 4% over 2 years and cap the work week at 60 hours maximum instead of 84. The talks are supposedly going to resume next Monday in a couple of days now. We'll keep our eye on this one. That is so sad. All right, we have to break. When we come back, we're going to link up with Jeff Stouffer of the American Legion.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast. And follow us on Twitter at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, connecting people with employment and celebrating 50 years. ulagency.org for more information. Let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our regulars, and we got lots to talk about today. Jeff Stoffer is joining us now with the American Legion Media and Communications Division. We're going to preview a couple of the articles in the upcoming August edition. And number one, this is perfect for our show since we talk about labor unions and employment all the time. Veterans and underemployment. The skills you learn in the military transferring to the private sector. But there's another problem here. Some of these vets don't want to do what they did in the military. They want something else. Hey, Jeff, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
Thanks, Flash. Great to be with you again.
So let's get into this story. And this is written by a doctor and a former Army major and a Bronze Star recipient with 12 years of service. And talk to me about it. Let's get into it.
Well,
I mean,
Dr. Sudabose is a nationally known emergency care doctor, and he was one of these amazing people who served in Iraq in the early years of the war. And, you know, they were renowned for saving lives on the battlefield. I mean, I can't remember what the figure was, but like something like they had a 29% higher survival rate of battlefield injuries. And he was one of these emergency doctors on the combat doctors on the battlefield in Iraq in the early going. And he is, combat veteran, went to Northwestern. He is a very accomplished doctor. Now he's a nationally known, you know, advocate for veterans and for veterans, you know, transitioning after having become disabled due to battlefield injuries, but also more generally to help veterans try to understand how to convert their military experiences into, you know, good jobs. And this is going to become more and more important, of course, as we draw down and withdraw troops, and presumably more and more, you know, military veterans are going to be entering the workforce. But, you know, and we certainly talk a lot about, well, how do I convert my military experience, my training and what I did in theater into a good career? And, you know, but he makes this great point. And he's got some statistics on this. First, he says 70% of people coming out of the military don't want to do what they did in the military, you know, but he makes the second point that if you drove a truck in the Army, you know, a lot more than that. Your skills are operation, control, coordination, communication, time management, problem solving. All of these are, you know, tick the box for multiple different kinds of, you know, complicated management operations and things like that. The bottom line is 33%, according to our statistics that we've dug up from a couple of different resources, 33% of veterans are considered underemployed. And this is an issue not just from, gosh, I sure wish I was making a better paycheck or my career was more fulfilling. But, you know, when you serve in the military for X number of years, and especially those that got, you know, reduction in force papers, you know, riffing before they were on their way to retiring, and they got riffed or they got reduced, and all of a sudden they're in the civilian workforce, and then they find out that, you know, I'm an enlisted or an NCO or a junior officer or something like that, and I'm, you know, I've got, you know, the military has covered some of these costs that all of a sudden I'm going to have to cover, and all of a sudden it's a big shift. And then you find out, what do I do now? And trying to find that job is really hard. And then they find out that they are not able to find a job that A, matches what they were essentially making in the military, and B, a job that, you know, is fulfilling and rewarding and promising for them for the future, try to raise their families on it. And I think that this is one of those points in the topic of mental health and well-being. You know, there's, you serve, you're in for a long time, you build a great resume of military service, you come out and you find out you're not qualified to do jobs that those who didn't serve in the military are now holding. So I think it's kind of one of those hidden little issues in mental health and well-being for veterans who come back and trying to restart their lives and finding out that what they can do and what they're qualified to do or what they're able to do in terms of what the employers are looking for, they're not getting the jobs that fulfill them nearly as much. And what Dr. Bose talks about here is there are some steps that can be taken to improve this. And, you know, it's in the issue of veterans employment and education, that's the division commission that works this issue for the American Legion. There are some steps that we've been, you know, pushing really hard. And one of the ones we've talked about before is, you know, improving the situation for veterans to come back and get licensed and certified in specialized career fields.
Sure.
So, and then also another aspect of this that he brings up is that, you know, trying to get HR staff from employers to understand how to develop dedicated recruitment and retention programs for former military so that they can, A, find the job that best suits their skills. I mean, if they've got, I drove a truck in Afghanistan or Iraq. Well, what else did you do? And how did you, you know, what else, you know, well, there are a number of different things that they could tick off the box. It's not just like driving a truck, you know, in a commercial sense, because you've got, you know, multiple different, you know, factors that can, but how do they help, kind of facilitate those veterans, and how do they give them opportunities to succeed? Because, you know, and he brings up the point that, you know, at the end of the day, there's a lot of intangible qualities that make veterans great employees: discipline, hard work, you know, loyalty, courage, mm-hmm. timeliness, dependability. You know, there's just a lot of aspects of a military veteran that employers would find beneficial. But there is a sense that it's finding that right place where they can have A, adequate pay, and B, fulfilling careers.
Tell them to get involved in the trades. I'm telling you, I can't tell you how many. Oh, and you're familiar with Helmets to Hard Hats, and there's a great program that the United Association started some years back called Veterans in Piping. And that has taken off. And, Jeff, they need workers. They need workers. And we're talking six figures. I mean, I record this show at an iron workers hall. They're working six 10-hour shifts a day. I mean, that's how much is going on around. And, you know, obviously there's certain parts of the country that are busier than others. But the bottom line is that's a skill that you learn in the apprenticeship program, and nobody can take that away from you. It's I just had to throw that.
I think to you, and thank you for reminding me, but again, to your point and maybe to our point, what we need to do is, you know, work on identifying some of those programs so that, you know, if you're, they, they, the you know, they have a DOD thing called, I think it's called Skill Bridge, or it's Bridge My Return. Bridge My Return is a hiring platform that shows where you can use your military skills to find a good job. But, you know, I think the key thing is that they know who these hiring trades are and who's set up to, you know, to work this. And I mean, communications, we got to build a bridge between the employer and the newly discharged veteran or the about to discharge military service person. So this is an ongoing issue. We've been working this for a long, long time. You know, this is something we've been in front of, but we really need to, especially now, as I think more and more of the Afghanistan and the global war on terrorism veterans are returning to civilian life, where this is going to be a prominent, you know, policy and advocacy position for the American Legion, maybe more so than in the past.
Yeah, you and I have talked about the Teamsters' involvement over the years, and they have done a really good job reaching out. You're talking about driving a Jeep or a Humvee or something like that. Well, you get certain skills in the military, especially when you're driving in a combat zone. So if you can do that, you can obviously drive an 18-wheeler. So they've been doing a lot of outreach, and right now they need truck drivers. I mean, they're doing huge signing bonuses to get people on board. But nonetheless, the bottom line is veterans are underemployed. That and 33%, that's one out of three. So let's just try to call as much attention to that as possible, because there are jobs out there. We just got to connect them. All right, let's take a quick break. Jeff Stouffer on our live line. Jeff is the American Legion Media and Communications Division Director. We'll continue the conversation. More good articles in there, one of them dealing with Agent Orange. And then Rich Fiesta will be joining us on behalf of the Alliance for Retired Americans. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on 5 platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Melissa Cropper, president of the OFT, will be joining us next Tuesday. Right now, we have Jeff Stouffer on our live line. Jeff is with the American Legion. Forgot to mention the website, legion.org, for complete updates. And if you remember, you should soon be getting the August edition. And in there is a heck of a story about Agent Orange exposure on Guam. And as I indicated at the top of the show, when you say Agent Orange, you think of Vietnam. You don't think of Guam. Jeff, what's going on here? I guess this goes back to what, the late 50s, right?
Right. Well, you know, Guam, I mean, if you served in Asia or in the Pacific, chances are you passed through Guam at some point, and there are based there. And it was a very common practice. And they had to kill foliage, and they also handled, or they were in contact with combat planes that went in and out of Vietnam during the Vietnam War. But over the years, like you say, between 1958 and 1980, they sprayed herbicides, dioxin-laced herbicides, all over that island. I mean, it was a kind of, it had to be done in order to keep the airfields clear and to basically to control the foliage all over it. And of course, mm-hmm. those herbicides back then contained 2,4-D and 2,4-5-T, which are the key components of Agent Orange. And they were basically sprayed and applied in a, quote, commercial sense in order to control the foliage, but not, quote, unquote, in a tactical sense, as Agent Orange was used in Vietnam to, you know, to control the jungle so that they could expose enemy positions. So this little distinction between tactical and commercial seems to be what has hung up a big number, like almost, I think that Ken Olson's article in the August issue mentions that I think it's upwards of 50,000. Yeah, upwards of 50,000 veterans who served on Guam were probably exposed and had exposure. And we've, in this story, Ken has worked with the Agent Orange Survivors of Guam, and there's another group called the Military Veteran Advocacy, which is trying to fight for, benefits and health care and recognition that they were, in fact, exposed to these dioxins. And these dioxins were the poisonous elements of Agent Orange. It wasn't, I think, so named Agent Orange when they were using it. They had a different name for it. But at the end of the day, it's the same poison that has affected, you know, hundreds of thousands of Vietnam veterans. And there have been some new breakthroughs in this discussion. The Veterans Legal Services Clinic at Yale produced this white paper report last year on the issue, because so many of these former service members contracted cancers, some have died. You know, what they're doing is they're showing all of the same illnesses and conditions that we now consider to be presumptive in for VA healthcare benefits and, you know, healthcare treatment and that sort of thing. You know, there are many of them we're talking about, you know, having all of the same illnesses and coming back, and then they go get their VA rating, and they've got a 10% disability rating for tinnitus, which is a hearing problem. They don't have, none of these conditions that they're suffering with have been linked to exposure to these dioxins. So the question is, you know, whether we made the same argument about the, you know, the Blue Water Navy and the Brown Water exposure mm-hmm. and during Agent Orange, there was the boots on the ground ruling that the administration came up with, I think in about 2004, that you had to have had boots on the ground in order to get recognized for Agent Orange exposure in Vietnam. But whether you were, and we would argue too, you know, if you were exposed to Agent Orange in the United States, if you were exposed to Agent Orange and you suffer from the same conditions and you were in military service, it was that exposure came as a part of your, you know, your duty, and it's like a job-related exposure of a contaminant. I mean, where you got the exposure is not as nearly as important as that you got the exposure and that you're showing the same symptoms and signs of the issue. So right now, there is a bill to provide, you know, or to pursue the benefit, health, VA healthcare and benefits for these 50,000 Guam veterans. But, you know, most of the cases that they file have been unsuccessful on the basis of this syntax, this definition between commercial and tactical use. And what they're saying, VA is saying right now, is that they're looking at the cases on a case-by-case basis. So a few, like maybe about three dozen or so, have been approved, but on a case-by-case basis. But again, if you're suffering from these conditions, and you know they've expanded the number of conditions recently to include bladder cancer, hyperthyroidism, and Parkinson's-like symptoms, which adds to the number of bad healthcare conditions that you probably, or if you suffer from them, and you were in an exposed area, that can be linked to that exposure. And it's about, you know, the question is not, like I said, it's not where you are exposed, it's that you are exposed. And that the American Legion has been fighting this, as you know, since day one, literally since they started coming back from Vietnam and showing these conditions. Related to this in a certain way, and it's kind of interesting that this is in our magazine, because just today we're going to be represented at a press conference in Washington on the Biden administration has declared or proclaimed that today will be Atomic Veterans Recognition Day, and this is recognition for those veterans who were exposed to, you know, atomic testing in like mm-hmm. Nevada and in the ocean and in the Pacific, and came home and suffered with various cancers and all kinds of lot of child birth defects and stuff like that in their children. And the whole Agent Orange story is rooted in the atomic veterans story, because it was in 1979 when an American Legion service officer got VA benefits and disability rating for a veteran named Orville Kelly, who had been exposed to ionizing radiation exposure in 1957 and 1958, because he witnessed 22 atomic tests in the Marshall Islands. He died like 6 months after he finally got a positive decision on his disability rating, and he died. And then that triggered the atomic veterans movement in the late 70s, and then with that as precedent, you know, the American Legion and veterans groups were able to get a sense of precedent in terms of exposure during military leading to healthcare benefits and compensation due to frankly, the diseases and the illnesses that they'd suffered through this exposure.
Yeah, Jeff, there's always one, maybe two people that serve as the catalyst for change, and hopefully more and more people will come together. We're talking about a time period from 1958 to 1980 in Guam. That's 22 years of Agent Orange exposure. All right, we got a couple minutes left. We got another one here. Fresh Air Family and Friends. This involves a story out of Idaho, the Idaho Post. Can you sum this one up for us, Jeff?
I think one of the things I think about with this story is it is the creation or the invention of an Idaho off-road riders program that was the spawn of COVID, if you will, because this is an American Legion post in Mountain Home, Idaho. Their members continued to meet and gathered, and they realized that they were kind of like dealing with COVID by going out on their four-wheelers on these little, you know, kind of couple of people who would go out on these ventures. And then they realized that, you know what, we've got enough people doing this that we ought to get a group together, get a bigger group together. So they started the Mountain Home Off-Road Riders Program. And what they did in their first year and what they continue to do is these are veterans who, you know what they're doing, and they want to do something with a purpose. So what they do is they go up into the Sawtooth Mountains of Idaho, and they clear the roads and the trails that are just the little, I mean, this is almost 10,000 feet in the mountains, but there's a lot of little roads that every year trees fall and brush gets over them. And so, and they worked with the Forest Service so that they could find out, you know, what roads they needed to go work. And they would go out and they would clear the roads so that they could be passable in case there's a fire and you have to go up there and get up the road. You don't have to stop and cut a tree apart to get through, mm-hmm. or else, you know, for other people who enjoy it. But mostly, and then they've turned it into, they have this site up on a cliff where they fly an American flag and a POW MIA flag And just when I was there in June, we went up to this cliff, and it's beautiful country. And they had a ceremony to spread the ashes of a veteran who he was found in a sandwich bag in a house after somebody bought the house, and they had the folded flag with him, so they knew he was a veteran, but they don't know who he was. So he's the unknown veteran of Idaho whose ashes were spread up on this cliff high up in the mountains. And they had they have an urn there where they do have a veteran whose name they know, but he didn't have any family and had no service. So they keep the urn there, they spread the ashes there, and they had a ceremony. It's kind of an unknown soldier ceremony up there. So this is a sacred place where these guys go. But most importantly is they also did about 200 miles of just, you know, riding around on the trails and the mountains and looking for things to clear off the trails so that people could pass through and enjoy the national forest down there. And it's something that they said that they could do during COVID and maintain social distance and get out in the outdoors and have a sense of camaraderie while everybody was isolated. Now they're coming out of that, of course, but that program has been a big membership magnet for younger veterans and younger members who, if you're in Idaho, you won't go very far down a road before you see a Razor or a Polaris or something like that on the back of a trailer, or maybe just one going down the road, because that is quickly becoming the preferred mode of transportation there. But it's a lot of fun. I went with this group, and we got some photos and some video, and the story and the video we'll post on the Legion website next week. So it's just kind of a moment where they say, and then also another element of this is, you know, if a veteran's having trouble, especially during the isolation, was having trouble during the isolation of COVID, you know, it was an opportunity to talk and see if they needed any help and what help they could do and how they could refer them. So it's kind of one of those kind of casual ways in which the Legion does its advocacy on mental health and well-being as well.
What a great story. And I'll tell you, what a great job you have. I mean, your job takes you to parts unknown. I mean, it's really fascinating that you were able to spend some time, and great pictures, too. Yeah, if you're a member of the Legion, you'll get this in the August edition, Fresh Air, Family, and Friends. Good stuff. I also want to call attention to the story that Jeff wrote, Overdue Honor, where a black D-Day vet finally got his Purple Heart after 77 years, all in the August edition. Jeff, good stuff. You hang in there. Stay safe. We'll talk to you next month, okay?
Thanks a lot, Flash. Thank you so much.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Rich Fiesta is with the Alliance for Retired Americans, and he's coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the North Coast Area Labor Federation, all connected to the AFL-CIO. Let's go to line number two. Welcome one of our regulars, Rich Fiesta, who is the executive director of the Alliance for Retired Americans, retiredamericans.org. Their Twitter handle is at Active Retirees, and that they are very, very active. Hey, Rich, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
Doing fine, Flash, and always great to be with you.
And I got a story yesterday. I'm sure this piqued your interest, and I mentioned this at the top of the show. If you are on Social Security, you're going to get, well, every year you get a 1-2% raise. It could be as high as 6.1% because everything is going up, and this is all calculated with the Consumer Price Index. However, that being said, I'm sure there's a couple members in Congress that you can talk about that say, well, wait a minute, you know, maybe we should recalculate it so it's not 6.1%. Rich, what's going on? Fill us in.
Well, as you know, every year since about 1975, there's been a call-up to Social Security based on the cost of living adjustments, based on a market basket of things people spend their money on. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics, every summer, in fact, right now, July, August, and September, take snapshots of what's in this market basket. You know, housing, clothing, gasoline is a very important part of it, for example, and we've seen raises there. And so then by October, they come out with the adjusted COLA for the following year. And, right, you know, no secret here. Gasoline has gone up and a number of things. We just saw 5.4% inflation the other day by the Feds under their calculations. So it's possible we could see a hefty COLA for Social Security come October when they come out with a formula. Now, remember last year, for 2021, it was only 1.3%. And ask any senior whether or not their prescription drugs or their medicine costs have gone up more than 1.3%. You'll get a big yes. So, and just 3 years ago, we had a zero COLA. And in 2011-12, we had a couple years of a zero COLA. So, you know, the COLA is supposed to match what's going on in the economy.
And there's some move in Congress to better reflect what that COLA does, because seniors, obviously, like, and we want to talk about prescription drugs here, they buy more prescription drugs than the general population. So it's really not fair then, is it?
That's right. We at the Alliance for Retired Americans have advocated for years to do a different formula than what Social Security uses. What they use is the market basket based on current wage earners. And as you just pointed out, Flash, seniors spend their money on different things than people in the workplace, like more on health care, housing, transportation. Those areas, such as gasoline, have seen higher rates of inflation than what the general population spends its money on. So we're in favor of this Consumer Price Index, CPI-E for elderly, which over time would have given seniors a higher COLA than they have been receiving over the last 30-plus years.
Very good, Rich. Let's just stay on that issue because that's important to our a big chunk of our listening audience, no doubt about that. All right, lower drug prices. I know the pharmaceuticals, it's like a runaway freight train here. They're making a whole lot of money. They're claiming they need the money for research on drugs, but I see the Alliance is urging Congress, okay, enough is enough. Why can't Medicare, especially now with Part D, why can't they negotiate for lower prices? Rich, where are we with this issue?
Well, as you know, since Medicare Part D was enacted in 2003 with a Republican Congress and George W. Bush in the White House, by law, Medicare can't negotiate for better drug prices on behalf of the 50 million Medicare recipients. Just crazy town. The Veterans Administration, the military and the defense hospitals, the Indian Health Service, all these other federal programs can and do, and states do it through their Medicaid programs. So we think there's good momentum in a bill called H.R. 3, which passed the House in the last Congress, and hopefully we'll get a vote on it very soon this year, that would allow Medicare to negotiate for lower prescription drug prices. As we all know, Americans pay the highest prescription drug prices in the world, drugs that are often created through our tax dollars, through the National Institutes of Health that give grants to various universities and other organizations, and yet we still pay the highest prices in the world. I mean, this is just lunacy, and we need to stop it now.
Rich, I see that Representative Carolyn Maloney, who's a rep out of New York and chair of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform, just held a press conference with Nancy Pelosi to release a report, and you pretty much reference it here, where they analyze the finances of 14 of the world's largest drug corporations. Can you tell us how well those drug corporations are doing right now, Rich?
Well, as we all know, they're just making record profit year over year. But what Congresswoman Maloney's report shows, that in their rhetoric is, oh, we need this money to do better research and create new and more important drugs. Well, the fact is, when you look at their finances, they're spending more on executive compensation, stock buybacks, dividends, than they are on basic research and development. It's a sham. And I urge everyone to go to the House Government Reform and Oversight Committee and look at the report. And it's very well documented. And as you mentioned, 14 leading world drug companies have been analyzed. And it's very clear they're spending more on themselves than on research and development on drugs.
Yeah, $56 million more on stock buybacks. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. Just ridiculous. And it's been going on for so, so long. All right, one more issue here. A week ago, President Biden fired the Social Security Administrator. And I guess this caused quite a stir because his job was supposed to be good until, I believe, 2025. And it's my understanding he, well, this is a guy that was appointed by Trump, so you kind of know where he's going with things. And I understand he did not have a very good relationship with the unions that represent Social Security workers. I'd like to hear what the Alliance had to say about Mr. Saul.
Well, yeah, from day one, Andrew Saul, who's an old New York real estate crony of Donald Trump, so that says a lot right there, sought to basically destroy the functioning of the Social Security Administration from the inside and the outside. Terrible relationships. Social Security, like a lot of government agencies, had the ability to work a couple days on telework. So he recalls telework, and then the pandemic hits when everybody needs to be teleworking to keep the Social Security Administration running. I mean, the irony is he was rarely in his office at the Social Security Administration, and he was working from his home in New York, for example. So he was the king of telework. But he delayed getting data for disability recipients into the American Rescue Plan for their checks earlier this year. So literally millions of Americans, disabled Americans, were delayed in getting their needed checks under the Rescue Plan for no reason at all. I mean, that's just a very cruel thing. I mean, we could have an entire hour on how poor Andrew Saul was as a Social Security commissioner, and President Biden took direct and very decisive action to get rid of him. It was the right thing to do. We at the Alliance had advocated for it for several years, and we're glad he's gone.
Fired on a Friday. That was a week ago today. Yeah, that was a heck of a story. All right, Rich, we're going to leave it on that note. Rich Fiesta, Executive Director of the Alliance for Retired Americans. Website is retiredamericans.org, and you can follow him on Twitter at Active Retirees. Active Retirees. We're talking about 4 million members across the country. You take care, my friends. Stay safe, and I'm sure we'll have plenty more to talk about next month, okay?
Great flash. Always great being with you.
All right. Coming up on Monday, the Tennessee Labor Federation and the New York Retail and Warehouse Union. That's Monday. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.